Okay, yes. What you were doing was telling me about how the Labour Party restarted again after the war, and then really kind of, I suppose, from there, sort of what happened till you got to be mayor?
Just before the end of the war, the local Labour Party, such as it was, called a meeting, you see. Just before the end, and the men, I told you, a sergeant in the Home Guard, but a stranger to Lewis, named Lou something. His Christian name was Lewis. He was there. He didn't come there because he was going away. He told me afterwards when I collected his money, gave me a sovereign, he was going away. I told him. Well, we met dinner Quakers from the Friends Meeting House, and we all joined together and Mary Moore to start going again. I was most anxious because of Bob Biggs, my cousin's husband. I told about him. And he lives at Kingston. And he could probably give you some information on it, because he was in that part just before the war, but I was out of it with my back and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
I think he was, democratic, what they meant there. But we met down there and resolved to form the party, which was done. And each got a job. I had to be propaganda secretary, and so on. A man named Parker came and spoke to us. He was a Labour county councillor and had been for a long time. Okay, so it was rather good, wasn't it? And he came from home or somewhere in Brighton, because soon after the war, when we won the election, some of us had to go down there. Oh, something in the show, in Messi's, in his head on a Christmas Eve.
Down where?
Down to Brighton, wherever it is. I can't remember where it is. Hove or somewhere that way, westward of Brighton.
Yeah, because Hove used to be part of the Lewis.
Yeah, he'd be dead by now, Parker. I remember listening to him when he was a young man, very enthusiastic young man, a bit brash. And he'd get tied up sometimes, the price of beef and mutton. He meant to say it's a meat and mutton, and that's right. Anyway, he came and brought up man then, of course, for county council of your standing, and he gave us a good talk for a start, you see, and put those right who were, there was one bit in particular, prison warder, who was more communistic, you see, and so, stick to the Triple Alliance, trade unions, the Labour Party, and the cooperative movement, and so on. And we started this going, we each got a job. And we tried to have the co-op hall, but the co-op was started, most of the people were in the co-op before the war, before that time. In the beginning, of course, were kind of radical people, the Liberal Party to speak through. As time went on, every foundry were all Liberals and management and all. One of the managers was chairman to it, you see. And we found they didn't want to let the hallway, they had a hallway, it's not a hall underneath that building. Didn't want to let it out. So we, those of us who were members and had a ticket, we went to the half-yearly meeting, and I had to move a motion that the hall should be let it to anybody who wants to use the hall, you see. I did quite well. The one nice chap on there, Dodger Elphick, unfortunately he died. They sat in a circle, a half circle on the platform, with the chairman just in front, you see. And I noticed we just got beat. All the committee voted against me, except Tom Dodger Elphick. I was pleased with that. Mm. And when we won the election, he said, "Oh, Charles, you'll be all right now. Nobody will ever get you back. Nobody will ever take those things away. And nobody ever has to on that again." It was queer, wasn't it?
Mm.
It was Bud Skinnerism after the war that kept things going, wasn't it, after we came out. Anyway, we did that, and we couldn't get that, so we got a hawk, got a wound in the King's Arms, and we're safe over, you know. A pub there, opposite, almost opposite to
Curry. Yes, I know.
Yeah. That was there for a long time. We've got a nice big room up above. And I must tell you one well-known person that who did help us. Have I ever mentioned Fela Tutt, or Miss Fela Tutt?
No, I don't think so.
She got to be a Lewis councillor. And I might have mentioned because when the WA started, only Dinah Stock came and started, only me and the wife in it. And Dinah Stock went then trying to get the library, which was in you know, where Frank's lived, Jim Frank lived there.
Yeah.
To lend boxes of books around. But it's not just WA books, a university box, and the WA books. You have to get some of your local library, you see. And they couldn't. And Dinah Stock went up and saw Fela Tutt, who lived up here somewhere in those days. And she was very youthful, but didn't, wasn't successful, you see. Anyway, she retired from school teaching then, and she was been on the council for some years. And she
was a county council.
Yeah, town council, yeah.
Borough council.
And she, we invited her to give us a talk on local government, and she was jolly good, you know. She was exceedingly good. And she gave the impression of a council, like any other body, is if it's a corporate body, it will have some tradition, it will live on, kind of immortally live on, you see. Things, and I've noticed it the same in everything. The Chelsea Football Club, even, they're supposed to be generally sort of nice and boy, and they still are now, but they've dropped into the. they were a joke, they were, you know, they're first class team. This Colonel Crisp, I mentioned his name, was a chairman of it, wasn't he? So we knew a lot of Chelsea. Anyway, that was one, but we had meetings of that description, you see. Occasionally somebody came along, but before we got into real swing, then the general election was on us, you see.
What, the 45?
Yeah. Mm. And without doing well, we were in disarray, we were all over the place, we all had different jobs during the war. All my time had been spent in the Home Guard, every bit of it, and my experience was so vast, I suppose, I don't know, but I got these jobs all on me every time. And had plenty of fun, but, you know, we had no time for anything else, and lots of all nights up and capering about over the hills and that sort of thing. I often remember when Bert Oram, the community, constituency, they called it the divisional, if you want to then, didn't they? The divisional committee, you know, chose him and worked to go down to verify it and that sort of thing. Remember going there then and coming back with Bob Tapp in the on top of the bus, all full of enthusiasm. Poor blokes, just like us, I say, Tom, Bob Tapp, I can't, you wouldn't know all of them, but all seriously, we were on the bus. After the war, buses were slow, so you had to wait a long time on occasion, sitting on the top deck, plotting, you know, and so and so. And I thought to myself, I wonder why this bloke beef was just, he don't know what he's coming to him, you know. And we nearly beat him.
Yeah.
We got 18,000, my Burke got 18,000, Oran got 18,000. I think they got 24,000 or something in that description. But we also had a slice of hope in our constituents, and that's where all those came from.
Yeah.
We were, you know, we were well away in this part, and then the country, so because the country was opened up a bit, so the people begin to get their eyes open. I heard, at one time, just before then, I heard Quinton Hobbs, you know, Hailsham, say, or I read it, he said in the Times or somewhere, that we should really have to look out to the Conservative. We should really have to look out. He said, we should be very unpopular and so forth. So, you know, that means that all around, all the country part were a bit annoyed. The blokes had been away, you see, for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something about it. It was about the first time I've been there. And, well, the Conservatives had real dates for getting in. Of course, they weren't lucky to get away with this, really, because it wasn't for this Hove. You know what Hove is like? Well, it's got a tradition of being a certain sort of place, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what these house. Beamish was, I couldn't stick him there, I got to like him afterwards, but unless he got to like me or something. Do you remember Yaffle writing in the Reynolds? A man named it called Yaffle.
No.
One of the Boothroyd family. It might be the same, a relation of the one who speaks there. He lived, and his wife lived in Pearl. He wrote a thing, he wrote funny little bits in Reynolds, rather, well, they were very witty things. And he gave me plenty of ammunition, so if you wanted to ask questions. Well, I read one through on the Sunday, I think. Bunty, my youngest girl, we came past the town hall. I'm just going to show you what Beamish was like in those days. And I had already said that I'd got on quite well with Margaret. Came past the town hall door, she said, oh, Dad, let's go in there, come on. Show me your bed. And so I said, no, it's quite left to Conservatives, youth. Youth movement, you see. It's quite private. Let's try and get in there. And the usher or somebody, one of the youth, come up to me and said, well, you can go in there. This place is reserved for visitors like you. So we went in, and all one side of the big aisle in the middle was packed with them. Then the other side, there was a man in front, some way down. We sat in about halfway, and I think there was one man behind us, with all of us on our side. So there was all the man squaffs speaking, and Beamish, of course. When it came to the end, they talked and talked. When it came to the end, this was after they lost the election, after we lost it, after they lost the national election. They said, you know, they'd like to ask questions. None of the young Conservatives asked questions, you see. So everybody fiddled about, and Bunty said, ask a question, Dad, go and ask a question. I said, I can't ask a question. And curious enough, the chairman looked across then, and he said, it was Michael Hillman, by the way, quite a pal of mine on the South Africa Hospital still. And he said, well, he didn't know me then, at least I didn't know him, you know, but I know him roughly by name, he probably knew me because I met him, same thing as the Labour Party. And he was a chairman, you see. And he said, well, perhaps some of the visitors would like to ask a question. I say, there's only four of them. The railwayman from Ipford, all men looked after everything there, see. He got up and asked them if they believed in the buying and selling of honours like there was after the First War. And all the men hastily jumped up and said, no, no, of course not, no, no. Very, very much against them. He'd inherited this with safety, hadn't he? Because they really liked that stuff around them. Then, I don't think the bloke behind asked anything, he's anybody else. And I just go on, Dad. So I did, and I asked him, which I read in the airport. The Liberals had a what name? Democracy, property owned democracy. The Tories had lifted that little demonstration. They wanted a property owning democracy, a proper democracy. So I asked him, prompted with this article I read, then, why, what did you mean by property owning democracy? Was it that only those with property, who own property, could vote? You can't possibly mean that. Can you tell me what you do mean? See? And he said, oh, well, no. And they just, but when he read his speeches, he got, well, that took a bit, put him out there, I am. Well, unknown questions, he was absolutely hopeless. Mm. I wish I'd known before. Nervy of it. And he sat in a most, you know, insolent sort of way he had about him. He'd only been to Sandhurst, and he'd been to some school and then to Sandhurst, and he didn't know there was any problem before the war, you know.
Well, he wouldn't, would he?
No need for him, would he? Mm. He had a pretty good career in the army, I think, and so forth. I thought, and he said, next question, and the chairman kind of handed it and whispered to him. So he got up, he said, Mr. Barber, I'm sorry if I've put you up, or whatever he said, I forget what he said, let's look at how he started. And the chairman, napping for a while, him lean over and whisper to him, look up here, right? So he said, will you give your answer again? I'd added a bit on to it, all from memory mostly from this thing. And he said, well, I said, first off, what do you mean by property? A property on your mind? Said, first of all, what do you mean by property? He said, well, he couldn't read his notes, but he couldn't go. He said, well, I said, do you mean real estate? That's right, real estate. He thought he could go away. Gosh, then I'd point out to him, but then everybody would be in debt in no time. What about that? Where's the money coming from? And what he fumbled a bit over there. He said, I'm as much against usury as you are, Mr. Barber, I expect. So I said, well, you might want to have some controls on money when you get in. Because one of the things against us in those days, and we're going to take over everybody's money in 1930, take the money at the post, take the savings bank, and all that sort of thing. Oh, Bunty, whispered, well, not to keep on the chin, and he sat down then. And, well, that was the sort of bloke he was. But when I began to act and been in this company more, he was very complimentary always to me.
He was a bit scared of you after that, I should think.
I don't know if he was scared after that, but you're always knocking shoulders together, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the mayor's banquet, well, right there, the mayor's banquet, there was Bert Oram was a guest, you see. Briggs had been there next one after about the 1551 was there as well, in Beamish. So the you got kind of oil of group, as it were.
Mm.
Anyway, I didn't mean to go too far on that, but that's to show you the sort of man Beamish was. He wrote a book called Half Marx. Anti-Marxist book. He did various things of that description. And, it was very unlike you. Nobody wanted him. Then he wrote The Battle of Lewes and made me a present to my friend. AC Barber, and so on.
Very nice.
And when later on, still when I was mayor again, the Southern came here and they said, could they have the room? And would I find some people to take to dinner with them in the White Hart? You see, it's Walker. His name was Walker, the chairman. So I did so and went there, and they're sitting in little tables round about, but we at the top table was in a kind of semicircle. Over there was Beamish and Dorothy, and then there's the chairman and the various people. Next to the chairman was Mrs. Beamish, and then me, you see. And I had to say something. I did talk about Tom Paine a good deal. And everybody was pleased with that, and she was American, his first wife, I mean, of course she did. She was an American, and so she said to me, and didn't you say Tom Paine lived here?
Mm.
I said, yes, he's on our council. He likes to be called Thomas, not Tom. She says, he never told me that.
No. Was he actually on the council?
He was Tom Paine on the council. If you could see Les Davy, he just in Smithy or somewhere, didn't he? Still, didn't he? Les Davy?
I don't know.
He was a treasurer. He's retired. He was a treasurer. The treasurer's right-hand man. And he's a local historian. So you'd find it. He got put me up to it. In, you can see it actually, I had the Secular Society come down, you see. So I had the Champagne Society come down, and then later on the Secular Society. And we dug out some things that would literally Davy got it, the real book, the minute book of those days.
Yeah.
And I think in the, I don't know, 1756 or something, that description, he was on this council, and there's his signature there, of attendance, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And on two signatures I got, well, I got some, a lot of people came to see these signatures, and they had some photographs, eh? At least anybody can grab one, you see what I mean?
Mm. So where are they be now? Are they kept in the town hall?
I suppose they're kept in the town hall, because the whole thing's given over, you see, so they... That's one of the... It might be a stupid feeling, but the, you do lose a lot when they go in on the big side, don't you, sort of thing? All their coaches and things and customs are gone, and the old codes and this, having all these little treasures are gone. It belongs to half of Sussex. Doesn't it? You see what I mean? Anyway, if you see Leslie Davy here, he'll tell you where they are anyway.
Yeah.
Johnny Baldwin, who is near the Clark in Lewis.
Yeah.
Bobby Baldwin, we call him. You tell him you know me, as I told you, ask him. Perhaps he could tell you where they were.
Yeah.
He was a boy, friend of mine's son, and he grew up, he got to be town clerk of New Aden for a while. He started as a kind of apprentice here, and had did various jobs. They did New Aden for a while, and when the town clerk died, they all moved or something, they took him, let him be town clerk, and put their other legal stuff out for that. He did a job quite comfortably for a long time, and now I see he's got this job.
That's right, Secretary of the District.
That's right, yeah. So if you ask him about it, tell you.
Yes, I will.
Tell him I told him, because you know where that he'd be more friendly, you know, be more willing to help.
Well, I know him quite well anyway. Yeah, he's been on the district council. Mm. I mean, I have often.
And he know that you know we had these things there, and people could look at them, and they had these photographs taken of his signature. You see. Mm. Anyway, Beamish is. Well, I said, oh, he didn't tell me. And she was quite annoyed, old Beamish, because he hadn't told her. Of course, he's died now. And from that kind of thing, the war time, when he kind of, or just after the war, at this conference, to the time that we got under quite regular terms, like, you know, always meetings, no good. Neither. In fact, at the bonfire meeting, the last one I attended, in 1969, I suppose, I gave a talk then. They always want to talk. The big talk on the, the cliff with the regular mad lot, you know. No Pope, then there's not no one. And of course, they're trying to say no Pope, if they like. And, the cliff one had theirs at the Grange, and our friend, the clergyman.
Oh, I know you mean, yeah.
Yeah, with a musical voice. He got a voice like an organ, didn't he?
Yeah,
Hapgood. Hapgood, that's right. I was thinking of the name of Dabchick or something, the name of a racehorse for him. Hapgood, yeah. He'd said, oh, just a matter of protest at this meeting. So I thought, I'm going to do the priest for protest, and then another protest, 1688. They always use a 1688. Not a soul knew anything about it, apparently, as far as I can make out. Anyway, on this occasion, the elephant, I did speak about, you know, the two, the bonfire and the 88. And Beamish said to me afterwards, you do know a lot about philosophy and history, don't you? So he must have maintained it way all round. Or he must have known, then he was, since he said that sort of thing twice to me, he must have felt a bit of a fall with a big laugh when he'd been when young, you see what I mean? So I'm just telling you, I've got no animosity of hate, but he was an insolent sort of bloke, wasn't he? You know, any, that's what he sounded like. Cut the ears of the noise.
When did people like, I mean, at the time that you're talking about, I mean, sort of just soon after or early 50s, when did people like Frank Haywood and Albie Martin and Bill Fuller, the people who are still active now, I mean, when did they...
Frank Haywood appeared about 1951 on their beds. He'd been to, I think he finished up his war, I went to the first when he covered up India, I think. Well, I know about it, but because when he came there, it was when they was going to stop the Korean War, the United Nations efforts to stop the Korean War, and India was to be the peacemaker, what they were, because we said had a hand on India, but that it's still, we're still watching them, they were free, but India took it on, didn't they? I don't know if you remember
No.
They were the mediators then between the North and South, you see. And in the one of the Labour Party meetings, Frank said, "Poor India, well, them they got no army." Yeah. So I remember when he's still fresh from India, like, and Albie Martin, I'd known him since he was a boy, of course. Albie came back into the army somewhere about the same time as Frank. He joined the Labour Party. He just appeared there, as it were. He was so extremely popular that we very soon ran him for a candidate in the Bridge Ward. We took all the hazes of a trade around the foundry and, you know, 19th century fashion, made the place of work so they're not far away, and he knew heaps of people around there. In North Street there were two pubs, one's called the Blacksmith Arms, right opposite that furniture place where Gorringe is, South Furniture, with Blacksmith Arms and houses each side of that, and round Spring Gardens and Brook Street, and Albie Martin lived along Brook Street. We got Albie to go for the case of Bridge Ward. He also took that part of Lewis, see. And what happened about him? Oh, he got beat narrowly for the first time, but it was wonderful to see the people down there. They were, there hasn't been carpeting when he came back to the Blacksmith Arms, surely. And they prayed it up in the porch of the town, or one of the steps where you get the door into the work. And Albie Henry just got beat by a few. And as he just finished and made their little speeches, you see, just finished, they come on, come down there. They said, stop, they come on, you don't belong down here again. They fetched it down there. Then the steps again, very nice, very refreshing to see the enthusiasm of what they were. And he's a very likeable chap. I've known him for. Well, always, I suppose. He was born after the First War, and I've known since he was a scout. I wasn't a scout, I told you I was kind of pressed into starting a vocal group, and I knew nothing about it, but I could collect people together. The only useful thing that came from it, I think, the St. John's Ambulance was built from there. Hit this just in our ambulance. We had to have having gone together, what if we got a group to move, what good should we do? Well, somebody suggested, well, first of all, it would be a good idea to learn some first aid. They learned first aid by going to the railway. There's no first aid, nothing, no ambulance, you see. They learned first aid by going to the railway thing. I suppose a little bit was paid to the railway to railway charities to help them. They had them regularly for their own men, in their own men, joint, and they made the first St. John's ambulance, you know. So that came from them. Yeah.
What about Bill? When did he?
Albie, I've known him since that time, you see. And I remember the first time I saw him come home from the Second War, being the Christmas. But after that, he went to Middle East, or whatever they called it in those days, in the Near East, we used to call it. It's the Middle East now. Where else was I came in? Keith Baker. Did you ever know Keith Baker?
No, I don't know. Did you know about Bill Fuller? Do you know when he arrived?
Yeah, but Bill came from somewhere near, I don't know when. I think Bill might have been a bit later, but I don't know. I couldn't be quite certain. Mm. All that time, my wife and I were either working, she on the divisional, or constituency, the divisional right then, and I was always on the thing up to 1951, see. She left after 1948, getting too busy before getting loaded down with it. And I left in 1951, left being a secretary. Mm-hmm. I was from 1945 to 1951, you see, and we had the elections had been through there, so, and Dorothy had some elections too. Mm-hmm. And we thought we'd better be going to have some over the WEA once it gets starting again, you see. So I went and got them going again and got on quite nicely with them. They got to be quite a strong body because some kind women, Betty, Hilda Charner, did you know her?
No.
She lives somewhere about here, 39. Lady next door lived in 39, Robinson, Marjorie Robinson, she lived here. And they were great help. Then some got the WA starting again, which also was a great help to the Labour Party, but a lot of Labour Party people came to it for a while, you know. Mm. After the war, when we got down to, we got programs up and set things going, it was an ideal place to be. And same as I came from the WEA in the 1930s, well, it was after Bloom and Bloom, we set, was pushing along all the time, you see, helping Julian Bell, Quentin Bell. Quentin Bell was the chairman of the Constituency Party after the last war, you know. It was a really useful place to live within striking distance of London for people, wasn't it? You know, you'd come down here, they couldn't go back. I don't think we ever got such huge names, or at least we didn't think so much of them in later days. You see, before then we had Bernard Shaw and people of that description, and this Captain Hall.
Well, Joe, you must have had people like Leonard Wolf. Hmm? I mean, Leonard Wolf must have come along, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he came along, Yes, he came along. He came along whenever you wanted at all. You know, he'd come along and do it. He did all sorts of jobs.
How about Kingsley Martin? Did he come at all? Hmm? Did Kingsley Martin come at all?
Who?
Kingsley Martin.
Oh, yes, he came. Yes, Kingsley Martin came, And there's a 1959 event. Were you here then?
No, we didn't come till 67.
Yeah, we got to know him well because Frank Hancock lived in a house when he was, 1930, when he came here, right at the top at Rumble. You drop over and go down to the other place, parallel with the road that leads over to Stelscombe, them places. Yeah. And after the war, sometime after the war, when he'd gone, Kingsley Martin had it, you see.
Yes.
Well, I was constituency chairman then, and so I had to be chairman when he went. And he was head of the New Statesman then, that period.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Very well known. And he, the thing I'm thinking about was mostly a meeting at Burgess Hill, we had a man named Ray, R-E-A-Y, and he was a chap, rather nice chap, from northeast somewhere. He was a telephone engineer. He's very rather working class bloke, but right, you know, very well educated, and he was good. And he studied all sorts of things, you know. He was our candidate on this election on Speaker in 1959. And I had nothing in Lewis. Bounty had these two together with the wife, and a friend of Bounty's said, let's go up there and to his meeting up there, you see. And I'd been Kingsley Marley's chairman over more in school and ran in Lewis, see. But up there they got their own little set up. And when we got in there, everybody was onto Kingsley Martin, onto the candidate mostly, really. All the Young Farmers League or something, I suppose they were. There were all sorts of funny people in there. But a very youthful lot, really. Jovial lot, really, you know. So Bunty and I and her pal, who hadn't been in useful political meetings, we plunged, she came with us. The wife stood, Dorothy, sedately took a seat where we came in, right? But where the shades started, we went, the three of us went plunging over the water, and the Bunty said, come on then. And we went over there, you see, and sitting down a bit, and Kingsley Martin came on, he says, no, when they started, don't be so childish, she said. You know. We said, listen, don't be Charlie. And he taught us, he completed the thing, or made a great success of the meeting, you see. Afterwards, I was chatting to him, and he said, I've got to go back. Hazel had brought us up, you see. He said, I've got to go back. Any of your people want to lift them? I said, yes, my daughter would love to lift them. So he said, go fetch her then. So I went and fetch her. Bundy was still in this group, you see. You see what I mean, the Johnny group. Just in this group, they're all arguing all around, like of the student age, you know what I mean, I said. And I said, Kingsley Martin says, if you want to lift back, he'll give you a lift back home. And they all start, oh, you lucky girl, bless you, luck. Notice luck comes their way, and so forth. Mm. It's funny, wasn't it? Mm. When we got home, Hazel walked down with me home. I let Bundy have a way and glory on her home. When we got home, they just arrived waiting for us. He said, I'm waiting for supper. She said, what have you for supper? So Gloria beat Dorothy had some sausages and some homemade, you know, wholemeal bread. So he said, the best supper we'd ever had. We just got that. So some of the meetings were joyous and there was a good spirit, really. Mm. The meetings in Lewis after the war, I think they must have been the most crowded ever, you know. Terrific crowds came in there. There was no seating inside the Lewis Town Hall, you know, like there was in this hall up at Upfield, at Burgess Hill. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, there was a lot, and they used to holler at Burgess Beamish, you see.
Mm. What did you do about things like getting members? I mean, did you do a lot of canvassing, yeah, and inviting people to join?
Yeah, yeah. I've done any kind of canvassing, and when I was secretary, I used to bike then because I was an insurance man between the, you know, before I left and went into the printing world. Yeah. I've been an iron moulder, an insurance man, and a printer. And I've done lots of canvassing, in both for politics all through that time and for insurance.
I mean, what sort of numbers of people were in the party? Can you remember what sort of membership numbers?
Yeah, about 300.
About 300, yeah. That's more than there is now, then.
Yeah, I bet it spent a while. Yeah. There was a, you know, the room where the Labour Club used to be.
Yeah.
So we had that room, the room above there, that was empty, you see. Yeah. It was used then, but no, we couldn't take it on. Well, I didn't say, as a good myself, I should like to see it taken on, but lots of fellows knew more than that, more than I did about that sort of business, you see. it was quite an important affair, and Seymour's had got it made. The floor you work on in Seymour's, these blokes put down, you know. In a time of shortage of wood, and their blocks made it of what the bloke made himself. He was a spare timer and he worked in the, well, he'd been a carpenter, obviously, or somewhere, and he worked in the post office, doing something or other, you know, doing the odd jobs, I think. If you ever go in Seymour, never look down, I expect they've ordered it now, and it might not be the same floor, but he did all that floor, and we had a bar on the second, on that floor, went up the stairs at the end, and you were in this long room, you see, it had quite a number of people. Mm. Not so many as a lecture hall, say, but quite a lot of down. And we had meetings, frequent meetings. Kay Gibbard came, you see, on one occasion. Others had been to Germany. There was a great deal of sympathy for the German people, you know, and people kept going there to see what was going on. They were sort of wandering a bit all over the place, and homeless and hungry and all that sort of thing. It was all upside down. That's what they called Germany's recovery, the German miracle. And Kay Gibbon had to go there for the BBC because she's an editor job on the Times she had at that time. She had to go over there and come back, and she gave us a talk on it. By God's grace, she was there. I enlisted her. A man in a bookshop said, "You want to ask that? Kay Gibbon, Captain Gibbon," he said. "You did next to the volunteer," and Lois, she did. He said, "She'll do on you," and so she did. I went in it on Sunday morning, went for it. And lucky jobs, we had one of these meetings about to do with the feeding of the continent, the starvation of the continent, and there, see? All these millions of people. And it was rather distressing when you wanted to get on and do things at the same time. And everybody at home was dissatisfied because the Labour Party won't let them have enough food, wouldn't take the rationing in office, foolish creatures. And that sort of business went on. Asked Ken Quentin to speak, I did, and he said he was coming. He didn't come that night. It was Kay Gibbard's first night, you know, this meeting, you see. She came to this first meeting she'd been to in there. And I went in and asked God of you, say something on this, because you are going to speak in the future on something like the top of the dirt I was in, you know. And I waited. When it wasn't on the phone, I'd go around the front of the table with the phone box in and made my arm ache, waking for what they looked. They said they didn't know where he was, they know he's at home. That's what many people said, they even though they inquired about their man at the post office. And I came back and Kay Gibbard got through quite successfully too, you know, quite a decent meeting it was. I don't suppose Quentin could have done any better, really. And then he wrote, he's most apologetic. He can't let the air that slipped out of his mind altogether, and he said. Yeah, it's just, but the little things that smile at them. But as I said, they were good meetings, the little meetings, I mean, the monthly meetings. And the speakers we had there at these monthly meetings, it was a continual. A lot of blokes were interested, that's why they were getting the WA, because the WA during the war, I think it was called the ABA or Army.
That's right. Army Bureau of Current Affairs.
That's what it was called.
Army Bureau of Current Affairs.
Oh yeah.
ABCA.
That's right. And I had been with Shaver, there's a lot of communists once when he was this days of his salad days like it. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. I remember, I think that's something that Kingsley Martin writes about in his autobiography.
Does he? I was getting there because I got interested in the book. And because after we had him there, we were invited over his in that place. We were invited over to his place, you see, where we'd been before, because Frank had gone there 10 years before, you know. Well, more than 10 years before. But when I think you do get tired of these things be too much, and I'd be best to let that drop down, do the WA for a while, get that going, then you know, you've got a fallback under you. And it's always a chance to keep these things going. Some blokes will go and learn something there, won't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there are several Labour blokes. I remember a chap named Dent, he's a very nice chap. And he said, here, Charlie, who's this Rousseau? He'd been to the WA, my carrot was taken, you see. Mm. So, he scattered a bit. I asked Michael Carrick once if he did philosophy, you see, and his old man got books on philosophy and that sort of thing. And on one occasion,